The Guardian.
Hello all, James Richardson here, and before we get started with today's edition of Football Weekly, I'm going to point you in the direction of our sponsor Squarespace. For more about building beautiful websites, go to squarespace.com. And now, on with the show. Football Weekly Extra. Today, Arsenal out of the Champions League, but second leg performance gives ground for optimism. Hang on, that's from last year. Oh, here we go. Juventus excluded from league after Bayern match. Oh no, that's from 2006. Hang on. Here's something we definitely haven't had before. Manchester City in the Champions League quarterfinals. Yes. We celebrate the exciting news from the Etihad, salute Barcelona and the bloody Bavarians, and cower the approaching juggernaut that is this weekend's derby-tastic fixture list for Man City, Man United, Chelsea, West Ham, and Newcastle, Sunderland. Hold your horses. Oh, hang on, we're back to old scripts again. Anyway, with Euro news and posts and so much more, this is Football Weekly Extra. That's what's on the agenda today. I don't make this stuff up. That all happened. And here to discuss it, Ian McIntosh.
Hello.
James Horncastle.
Hello, Jimbo.
And Paul McInnes.
All right, mate.
Yeah. Keeping it real, Paul. Keeping it real.
True that.
The Bayern game, we're going to start with that. It's so unfair. And everyone going, what a great game of football it was. What a travesty. What a travesty of football that was.
Corriere della Sera today called it a masterpiece in ruins.
A masterpiece in ruins. That's about right, isn't it? I mean, sometimes, you know, ruins can be... I mean, it was an amazing game of football. And a long one as well. Too long for some, but I probably shouldn't get into that. It was a masterly game of football. What an extraordinary... You know, swing of the momentum, the tie over two legs, 2-0 to Bayern for an hour, and then a spell of almost an hour of game time with Juve scoring four unanswered goals, and then Bayern scoring four unanswered goals when it counted. Had the ties been the other way around, of course, it would have been Juve with the extra time and the momentum, and obviously they'd have gone through. they would have, and had that disallowed goal been allowed, they probably would have won 6 or 7-0. And had they not loaned Coman...
Without a clause.
Regrets. They'll have a few.
But Bayern are pretty good.
They are. I thought the changes that they made after the hour mark swung the game back in their favour. A red
tide became
a tsunami.
The changes they made or the changes that Max Allegri made?
Well, a bit of both, yeah. I thought taking Morata off and bringing Mandzukic on, who wasn't fit enough to start, was... A bit of a disaster, really.
Why do you think he did that?
Well, he said that he wanted someone basically to go on the pitch and be able to hold the ball and give them a presence in the box. But the reality was they were never anywhere near the box after the hour mark because of the changes that that Guardiola made. And Morata is someone who's much better than Mandzukic on the counter-attack. That's why they were so successful in the first hour.
Yeah, incredible run. Whereas Mandzukic in the first leg had shown absolutely nothing, really.
Yeah, aside from being a warrior.
Right.
I mean, had played Dybala through for the first goal, but I think it goes to show the strength in depth that Bayern have got to bring on Coman and Thiago. The switch that Guardiola made when he brought Coman on and basically put Costa inside, and from that inside right position, they just wreaked havoc. Mm. The crosses into the box, I thought Alexandro, who'd been really good, tired, and then Evra, Ever in the 91st minute, what was he thinking? Just kick the ball away. Just get it out. And it's small details like that leave the old lady out on the street.
Mm. Indeed. What did you make of Bayern, Ian? Bit shaky at the back, but otherwise?
Well, it was the players you usually look to as the solid ones who sort of fell apart. Alaba in particular for the first goal. And then, you know, continually afterwards.
I love the pace. I don't know why you're laughing at that. Listeners are going, why are you laughing?
I love.
But how nice to see, you know, Guardiola throwing on a winger in the final stages of a game. Get some crosses in, that will sort it out. It was a kind of old-fashioned English tactic, which bodes well for Manchester City next season.
The English punditry were hailing this result as a good thing for the Champions League because Bayern supposedly offer more of a threat going forwards to say the likes of Barcelona. But based on that performance, I'm not sure that they do.
No, I agree. I thought unless they get Jerome Boateng back, I think defensively they are vulnerable. And Ian mentioned Alaba, but I think Neuer was equally culpable and shaky in that first half. Mm. He did pull off a wonderful save just before half time from Cuadrado, which I think if that had gone in, I can't see Bayern coming back into it. Mm. Yeah, and they can be got at, as Juventus showed. If you are bold and courageous in your approach, if you press them high and have a go at them, you will get some joy.
I was a bit surprised by the tone towards Juventus, because they did make the final last season, and they've been pretty good domestically for a while. But there seemed to be this notion that it was, you know, that they were up against Ghent or something like that.
It was very odd. I mean, Juve, salute them for their performance without... I mean, Marchisio was out, Chiellini, which may or may not
Dybala.
Be... But above all, Dybala, the man who lit up the first leg. Well, anyway, they have the Turin derby this weekend as they defend their three-point lead over Napoli at the top of the table. Paul, did you see this game?
Yeah, I did. I just loved watching it. I mean, it was a very English game in Champions League form, i.e. it was end-to-end, it was played at a high pace with a lot of physical strength and attributes into the game, but it was done with a really, really high technical level. And I just, my jaw, the second goal, the Juve second goal, my jaw just dropped. I just thought that was wonderful.
Yeah.
A really exciting goal. And to see a player like that who, you know, I don't see that much of Morata outside of the Champions League in the odd Serie A game. So I kind of had him as a hard working sort of mobile target man. To see him just carve right down the middle of that team was quite exciting.
I honestly thought Cuadrado was going to screw that up, and I think that would have been that would have been justification just to go over and nut him.
Yeah, and that chance for the 3-0, that was when he should have probably done better with, at least, you know, got it a little bit higher. But I feel with Bayern, from again what I've seen of them, that it is possible, thinking back of the Arsenal home game, that it's also possible to defend deep and defend compact against them. You know, that their deliveries were great, but also the marking was slightly off at the end there, you know, kind of letting Muller get free at the back post.
Yeah.
I think it's that game suggests to me that there are greater vulnerabilities in this Bayern team than people have been writing them up as having over time. So I'd be interested to see what happens should they finally face Barcelona.
But I mean, Pep was saying last night, he was like, look, we scored four goals against an Italian team. We scored four goals against this Juventus team, which has kept 10 consecutive clean sheets in the league. Buffon's been, in Serie A, hasn't conceded in 15 hours and 26 minutes. It's no small feat. But their approach at the beginning of the game was clearly wrong.
Mm. Yeah, and Juve's approach at the beginning of the first game was pretty wrong as well. Yeah. Anyway, Bayern go through. One last thing on this, perhaps, before we move on to Wednesday's other game. Why did Juve let Coman go? Vidal, there was a logic to that. But you mentioned the Corriere dello Sport headline this morning. Is there any kind of questioning of the wisdom of some of Juve's transfer policy last summer?
Well, it's been the story of their Champions League campaign in some respects, because they would have finished top of the group if they hadn't let Llorente go to Sevilla for free.
Right. Yeah.
And he scored the winner in the final match day. Juventus were scratching their heads as to how they didn't top that group, because they beat Man City home and away.
Mm.
And then Kingsley Coman comes on and makes the difference with a goal and assist last night. The explanation for why they let Coman go is because he wanted to go. He was frustrated that in his first season he didn't see enough game time.
Mm.
And they valued him as a player. They appreciated his talent. And we saw at the beginning of the year, they actually, Allegri was starting him ahead of Dybala. And there was a lot of pressure to say, why aren't you starting Dybala?
Mm.
And then Coman went, I mean, you could say, look, they've got a good deal for him because they signed him for free like they signed Pogba.
Right.
And they're going to get €28 million for him. But at the same time, when you see that he's a 19-year-old and what he did at the weekend against Werder Bremen and what he did to them last night, he's got a world-class future ahead of him.
Certainly, yeah.
So it's definitely happening that he's going to turn that into a permanent.
Yeah. He's come out a couple of times and said, I'm not going back. This is where I want to be.
Go on, call it.
Coman the Bavarian.
There you go. All right. Well, elsewhere in Champions League land, people who paid a lot of money for those TV rights were excited by Tuesday's action, which involved absolutely no goals whatsoever. But then quite an exciting penalty shootout, which saw Atletico Madrid take their place in the quarterfinals over PSV. Man City went through as well.
So I saw this thing that with the penalties, then Simeone seems to do an endless run, and I just saw it in close up. Did he run from directly from one end of the ground to the other, and did he jump in the pylon or not? Because it looked to me like he was running for ages and then stops at the end. So he's like, I'll be this undignified, but no more.
he definitely made it from the dugout all the way to the far corner.
Yeah.
But he'd expended a lot of energy before that. I mean, not least in summoning up some kind of dark magic towards the end, where with the penalty shootout going on and on and on and no one missing, he just suddenly started walking around in circles, urging the crowd up into higher and higher levels. And then the penalty was missed and it was all over. And he thought, you should have done that at the start, really.
Yeah, he's like a Capoeira.
Or
Claudio Ranieri.
Yeah, he was doing that on Monday, wasn't he?
He was indeed.
Yeah, we'll save our Ranieri chat for later, though.
Okay.
Later, because right now it's time to talk about the other pretty spectacular game on Wednesday night, which was, of course, Barcelona-Arsenal. Wow, the stars were out for this one. Barcelona with MSN, Messi, Suarez, Neymar. Arsenal with Alex Iwobi.
And Matthew Flamini,
who had, of course, played a decisive role in the first leg, so it's good to see him back.
It's almost like Wenger had Everton in mind.
Because there were comments along those lines. Did he do a Brendan Rodgers against Real Madrid on this?
I think it was a half Rodgers. I don't think he played all of the kids. There were still some strong players out there.
Right.
Ozil and Sanchez. But
is that like Robert Downey Jr. in Tropic Thunder? You never go full Rodgers.
He will have bad memories of Everton as well, because it was about this time 2 years ago that Roberto Martinez played a 4-4-2 with Romelu Lukaku on right wing, and he just punted long balls at him, and Lukaku destroyed, I can't remember who the left back at the time was, it might have been Monreal, and Everton won 3-0. I think that was a moment a lot of people thought, yeah, this is probably over. And yet here he is 2 years on, still doing pretty much the same thing at the same level.
And the odds that we'll be having this conversation in 12 months, 24 months time, pretty, would they be low? If it's probable, be low, pretty low.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Pretty low. Anyway, but I haven't finished talking about events at Camp Nou, where there were some pretty amazing goals from Barcelona. Now, to be fair, listeners, we were all busy watching events at the Allianz Arena, but we've caught extended highlights, I'm sure, of the Barcelona performance afterwards. Amazing, no? I mean, The goal that Messi didn't score at the start was almost the most amazing bit. Oh. That incredible takedown on that.
Yeah, but what an incredible pass from Neymar as well.
Yeah.
Just, they all combined together. I mean, they all scored, they all set each other up, and they've scored 106 goals between them this season.
Right.
So more than 80% of Barca's total, more than most teams.
Yeah.
Remarkable.
Neymar opened the scoring. Suarez did that ridiculous bicycle kick.
It's like the Canio style.
Oh, glorious. Well, it wasn't a bicycle kick because he didn't go upside down. A kind of
scissor
volley thing. Yeah. And then Messi had that brilliant
dink.
But it was more than dink. It was such a misdirection on that. It was like, you know he's going to dink you, but not in that angle.
No. And also, it was so close to Ospina as well. He managed to lift the ball over him. And he seems to do like a... It's almost like he's going for a step over and then he just instead scoops it up and over.
That little shuffle.
Yeah, magnificent. But I think Arsenal thought they dealt with the danger there. Was it Neymar or Suarez? It'll have been one of the two who they tackled and then, oh no, the ball's fallen to Messi. Damn.
Yeah, well, off Arsenal go. And Alex Iwobi, did you know that he's JJ Okocha's nephew?
No.
He was tweeting, so happy watching Alex Iwobi. Nephew in brackets on the big stage. I'm very much impressed with his performance, says JJ.
I like the acronym MSN.
Yeah.
Partly because it's so naff. And it does seem to be alluding to the Microsoft network and Hotmail. So it's great.
Yeah.
But actually, if you look at the Arsenal team with Iwobi, Ozil, and Sanchez, they had iOS out last night.
iOS.
The iPhone operating system.
Oh, yeah.
So they've got their own little tech acronym too.
Wow. Brilliant.
So it was a PC kind of win of a Mac.
That's right, exactly. Mm. Steve Jobs turning in his etc.
Anyway, Arsenal go out of the last 16. Sorry, let me just pick that up. So, Barcelona, Bayern, Man City, Benfica, Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid, Paris Saint-Germain, and Wolfsburg. The draw is on Friday morning. Somebody was tweeting it, saying, surely Tuesday and Friday would be a more sensible time to be doing your podcast. I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying, especially when there's Europa League. But the fact is that Monday, you want to be reacting to what's happened on the weekend.
You do.
You could make a case for Tuesdays, I suppose. But if we do it on Tuesday, by the time that Ben's edited it into shape, it's late
Thursday.
Yeah. And I mean, that would be the problem for Friday. Were we to wait for the Champions League draw on Friday morning, it wouldn't be up until kind of just after lunch, probably on Friday.
Well, after that, because we'd have lunch probably as well.
Oh, yeah, then we'd have lunch. Yeah. So, you know, be fair. Anyway, so Arsenal have gone out of the 16s, last 16s for the sixth straight year. One win in eight for all competitions now.
And against Hull.
And now they're left with the league. 11 points behind, by the way.
There's going to be a lot of surprises in it, though, says Wenger. It's not over. It's very much something in the mix.
2 months of football to go. They have a game in hand, and they have a trip to Goodison Park. Can they win this? And does it matter even if they did?
Can they win? If they won the league, would this be
good? No, this game.
Can they win against Everton? Yes, they can win against Everton.
Do you think it will matter?
I don't think it will. Right. I think it'll only matter if they get in with 2 points of the top of the table, and then I would expect them to bottle it again.
I must respectfully disagree, though. I do think Arsenal are still in it. They're still... they've got 9 games left, haven't they? Against the 8 of Leicester. And when you look at the squad and the players there, it's, you know, there are quality players there. They should be able to do this. Plus,
one
of course,
win in 8.
Yeah.
One win in 8 matches.
But this has been the most ridiculous season ever, and I don't think it's suddenly going to go all conventional in the final furlong. I think there's still twists to go.
Right.
Arsenal have it in them
Ian
to get back into
just said Arsenal. Yeah.
Also,
you know what that means.
Everton's record at home is pretty appalling. So for all the fears of what happened in the past, I mean, it's kind of mentality thing. They shouldn't be...
Arsenal have it in them, but they're also up against two teams who are proving themselves much more consistent over the course of the season so far. I can't see both of them dropping the requisite points to let Arsenal in.
Isn't also, sorry, James.
Isn't that the greater indictment? Ian was saying, you know, it's not going to revert to convention here. It's going to get even more ridiculous. And even more ridiculous would be Arsenal winning the league.
Possibly. You mentioned Everton with poor home form. They did just stage a pretty impressive home win against Chelsea, albeit in the FA Cup. And looking at the way Lukaku played, you mentioned how he did against them a couple of seasons back, but how he performed against Chelsea, the thought of him going up against Arsenal.
It is worrying. Mm. You know, I'm not sitting here saying Arsenal are going to win the title. Obviously, that would seem a little silly. I'm just saying that there are still quality players here. They should have it in them to go and beat Everton. And Everton, in much the same way that I don't trust Arsenal, I don't really trust Everton either. They don't seem to have any kind of game management whatsoever. They just go full throttle from first minute to the last, regardless of context. So, you know, next week is wide open. You never know. Leicester drop points, maybe Tottenham drop points. Right. Arsenal win, game in hand. Suddenly it's all changed. Yeah. I'm just saying it's still open.
Yeah, that would put them 8 points back with a game in hand. And yeah, stranger things have happened. All right, so you're having, even if they get these 3 points here, you think that what, Leicester and Spurs, Leicester are away at Palace.
Who haven't won in the league this year.
In 2016. Yeah, and so they're the only team not to have got a victory in the calendar year, like I think anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. Probably in the world.
Possibly.
As well. I'm not saying it's likely.
To be fair, both these sides do seem to be slowing down a touch, Leicester and Spurs. Leicester on Monday night, not sure if you saw...
Okazaki.
But it was another 1-0 win. It was a nervous performance, no? Claudio Ranieri looking very tense on the sidelines.
But it was a game where you would imagine that the nerves would be highest because the expectation was on them to win because they were against Newcastle and they were at home. And it was all this, the 5 points clear, nothing can take it from them now. I think it's going to be very nervous from the whole run, but there'll probably be peaks and troughs of it. But they haven't choked it yet.
No.
And the pressure will continue to grow as it gets closer and closer, but a lot of people have been expecting them to fail a long time before now.
Yeah. Interesting stat. Their remaining opponents, from those games earlier in the season, they took 20 points, right, which would be enough to do it. Spurs, from their remaining opponents, took 10 points.
Interesting, James.
That is interesting.
Did you make that yourself? Did you conduct that arithmetical?
It's out of numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talking about Leicester and Spurs slowing down, there was a report in the Italian papers today that Roma are not going to offer a contract to Francesco Totti, and Claudio Ranieri wants him.
For the Champions League campaign next year.
For the Champions League campaign. Oh, imagine that.
Bring back Cambiasso.
Could it happen? Because this is, you know, Leicester, do you remember when they brought Roberto Mancini out of retirement?
Yeah.
For about a month.
Yeah.
But still, it happened. Long enough for him to say, all right, midup.
Yeah. Maybe they'll bring him on for a standing ovation at the Bernabeu.
In some ways, I don't want Totti to ever leave Roma and be a one guy. But if he were to, Totti and Ranieri at Leicester.
Yeah.
It's just getting better and better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, just on the subject of Leicester's game at Palace, Palace now 8 points from the drop. Now, I think we pretty much assumed it was the bottom four. But could Palace yet drop into that? They've got a rotten run coming up. They've got West Ham, Arsenal, Man United, and they have to play both Newcastle and Norwich, two of the teams down there. And, of course, they've also got FA Cup semi-final action with Watford. Are Palace in it, or am I just kind of conjuring stuff up?
No, Palace are definitely in it. They haven't won in 12. They haven't won a game since December the 19th in the league. Wow. The only games they've won have been the FA Cup. And the problem is quite clear. They haven't got anyone scoring goals. Their top goal scorers are all on 5. And that's Kabay, Wickham and Scott Dan, legendary goal scorer Scott Dan. They're really, really in it. But if Pardew was watching on Monday night, he will have seen that Benitez, for all the flack he gets, he's not stupid. And he knew that if you put everyone very, very deep, Leicester can't hit those quick balls over the top to Jamie Vardy. It's a surprising number of managers haven't figured that out, including Manuel Pellegrini particularly.
To be honest, Benitez had a lot of time on his hands these last few months.
And he's got a tactics blog as well.
He has. He's probably been working it all out as a thought experiment anyway. Mm. But he, you know, Leicester did look nervous. If Pardew's been watching that, and if Pardew draws some lessons from that, he could be in a position where he can really frustrate Leicester. And, of course, there's some good news for Palace. Emmanuel Adebayo has rebuffed an approach from the Togolese FA to bring him back into the fold. Oh. For the African Nations qualifiers, he said he wants to focus on the battle with Palace.
Right.
So they
the battle
there's...
with Palace? Yeah, well, battle with Palace.
On behalf of.
Right.
I think the only thing about Palace is they have lost 8 of their last 10 games, which means they're not particularly good at keeping clean sheets.
No. Again, I do accept this is an unlikely scenario.
But it's good that we air all scenarios that we can consider them.
Spurs taking on Bournemouth. 3 points for Spurs. I know Bournemouth are doing well on that, but...
Bournemouth are doing very well. 1-3 on the bounce. And with 38 points, I think they're probably safe now.
Right.
I mean, 8 games to get another couple, they should be all right. But Tottenham were very much back on form. I was at Villa Park on Sunday, and the key thing about them was that for the first half, the majority of the first half, everything that could stop them scoring happened. The ball was pinging off the goalkeeper's chest, off his legs, off the woodwork. And it was one of those games where if a team has really started to question their place in the title race, everything goes horribly wrong. Mm. But Tottenham just kept doing it, just kept knocking on the door.
Right. Plus they're now out of Europe and FA Cup and everything, so they've only got the league now.
Assuming they don't try and wrestle back the tie with Dortmund.
Oh, yeah, hasn't actually finished.
Thursday night.
My mistake.
Because it looks that way.
There is talk that Harry Kane might start in that game.
Oh, really?
So you do worry about him suddenly just, you know, pulling up and doing himself out for the rest of the season or something like that. Mm. But there was just a certain resolve and a professionalism about Tottenham on Sunday that suggested that little wobble that they had those 3 games without a win, that should be behind them now. And I think Bournemouth will be in a place where they're 38 points, we're pretty much done. Mm. Well, Tottenham should win that.
5-1, it finished 2 Spurs at the Vitality Stadium with a hat-trick for Kane earlier this season. Oh, and a bit of a nightmare from Artur Boric as well.
And the PA announcer.
Oh, yeah, why?
As well. Well, over the speakers towards the end of that game.
Oh, that game?
Came a lone voice going, men against boys, and various other things.
Yeah, which someone had hacked. It was the phone got on the frequency.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Spurs are a young team.
They are a very young team.
I think we're long overdue for a little bit of a word from our sponsor, and then we'll be back with what looks a pretty exceptional weekend for the battle for fourth. How do they come up with these things? The battle for fourth looks like rare fun this weekend. I mean, Man City, this is the situation. Man City are in fourth at the moment. They're only 2 points clear of West Ham, who are only 2 points clear of Man United. So you've got those 3 teams within 4 points of each other. Hang on, another 3 points further back are Liverpool, but they have an extra game in hand on the three that I've just mentioned. So you kind of have to say they're in that mix as well. You've got derbies galore this weekend. Man City taking on Man United. West Ham away at Chelsea. While Liverpool make the trip down to Saints. You remember they beat them, what was it, 6-1 in the League Cup earlier this season? Anyway, wow, what's going to happen this weekend?
Saints are the hardest team to read in the league. It wasn't long ago they were on a run of 1-10 that had them plunging towards the relegation places. Then suddenly I think it was 5-6 and they're back to Europa League places. Then another little run and then they beat Stoke away from home. They've been a back three, a back four, so can't even be entirely sure what formation they're going to play. And Liverpool will, of course, have Thursday night's game with Manchester United.
With Manchester United, how much impact is that going to have?
You think quite a lot. I mean, Jurgen Klopp has pre-match got them all sort of wound up and talking about going out there with people hating them and all the noise. And so I think, you know, on an emotional level as well as a physical level, they're probably going to put a lot out on Thursday night.
Right.
Basically, what I'm trying to say is I have no idea.
That's the thing. I mean, that's what makes it such an entertaining weekend. The Manchester derby, equally. City played on Tuesday, and Man United will be in action on Thursday. Who knows? Maybe they'll even go to extra time and stuff.
Yeah. I think the
might do. It's only 2-0.
Yeah. I mean, City last week against Norwich were... I mean, Norwich ship 2 goals a game, with the greatest of respect to Paul.
Yeah,
they ship
actually,
2 goals a game.
Actually, we played very well, actually.
Norwich did play very well. Mm. Defensively, far more organised than they've been in the past. Mm. But Manchester City, that team, those players,
well,
and it's Norwich.
Company now as well.
Yeah.
That's devastating. I mean, a lot of fingers being pointed at Manuel Pellegrini for playing 6 times in 20 days.
Yeah.
What
was he thinking?
You feel for company.
Trophies.
Yeah.
When you saw his face as he pulled up against Dinamo Kiev, you know, it's just something that can't do really anything about, aside from not starting so often in so little time. But and we all know about City's very poor record in against teams in the top eight this season. They've only won once, and that was against Southampton. 82% of their points this season have come against teams in the bottom half.
Are you saying you fancy Van Gaal to, you know, rub away some of the blots on his copybook by getting a big derby win?
Just because I think, yeah, they could be starting Mangala and Demichelis in this game.
Right.
Which is always a recipe for disaster, because Otamendi, of course, went off as well against Dinamo Kiev. And, yeah, I think that Norwich game, where they didn't even muster a single shot on target
in the second half, chasing the title supposedly, and would you like to have one?
And I think, you know, you look at all that, they look at the defensive problems, but the attacking options as well, bar Aguero, and yeah, pretty much all their forwards and attacking players have some issue with their form. You know, obviously Navas, Sterling does not look a £50 million player. Silva is struggling to get back to his best and quite often having to be shuffled around to accommodate other people. Where Yaya goes, nobody knows. That you know, they've got, I think they've got issues all over the pitch.
The big miss, which people always say, City will be back when, you know, Kompany, Yaya, Silva and Aguero are playing. But De Bruyne has been a huge miss.
Yeah, but they very rarely had that four in the team either, have they, you know, over the course of the season.
Mm. It's all got so bad so quickly. I mean, a week ago you could look at the fixtures, again, starting with Norwich, and say they should be winning these. They should be winning all of those. Mm. I know they haven't strung 2 wins together since October, but...
That's a crazy stat, isn't it?
Yeah. If ever there's a team with the personnel and with the experience to string a late run of victories together, it's Man City. But after that Norwich game...
Exactly. Do you know what? We're saying 3 points for Man United here, aren't we?
We're leaning in that direction,
which would see them move to just 1 point behind City, but would it also see West Ham move past Pellegrini's side into fourth spot and potentially even level with Arsenal? West Ham, of course, they're at Chelsea. They beat Chelsea 2-1 at Upton Park. They're joint top of the form table. Chelsea, are they another of those teams that, you know, it's all over for them now?
Well, yeah, motivating that Chelsea team is going to be very difficult. It was difficult when they're in contention for stuff. But what it's going to be like now that their season's effectively over, God knows.
But still unbeaten under Gusto.
Right.
Domestically, yeah. But they have very little to play for.
Right, I said big injury. What I mean, big absence, no Diego Costa.
Yeah, squeeze.
Unleash the Pato.
Squeeze out the Pato.
Squeeze out the Pato.
Find Pato would be.
He's been sat there looking, you know, kind of amenable and, you know, not averse to the idea of actually stretching his legs on the pitch if necessary. But, yeah.
Just bring back Falcao. Stick the two of them in together. Go, you know, go two up top with two players who, you know, not even sure if they can even.
I like it.
These boys are playing for their futures because. I think we all know who's going to be their new manager.
Right, Antonio Conte.
Yeah.
If you were picking a manager who's had recent Juve experience, would you go for Allegri or Conte?
I think the profile of manager that Chelsea want is someone who has the same intensity as Jose Mourinho.
Right.
Just is less toxic.
Right.
Because if you look at the people they were profiling, it was Conte or Simeone, who are quite similar in that respect. But, yeah, I mean, I suppose the brief for Conte will be more or less the same as when he got the Juventus job. You know, they'd finished seventh in back-to-back years, were out of Europe.
Right.
Put them back on the top of the table. You know, he had no sentimentality when it came to moving on Alessandro Del Piero. Wouldn't it be the same with John Terry? And when it comes to relentlessness, you know, he's someone who put up 100 points in his third and final season at Juventus. And in a league where Pep Guardiola will be next season and Jose Mourinho probably... And they did that at Real Madrid and Barcelona in their title race in La Liga. That's probably what Chelsea need.
He might even bring through some kids.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
He likes a shout as well, doesn't he? He likes to shout at the dressing room. And I think after 6 months of cuddly Gus Hiddink, that might be a bit of a shock to the system. Well, yeah. And quite possibly a shock that they need.
I was just wondering on that Jose Mourinho point. It seemed to me have gone a bit quiet. Is it still looking likely that he'll end up at United?
Well, he gave an interview with BT Sport last night, I think, didn't he? Where he said he still doesn't know where he will be, but he will definitely be working in July.
Right.
He's been spotted around London by producer Ben's dad.
Okay, so put two and two together, and what have you got?
Maybe
he'll have a job in London?
I saw a flurry of articles about Ryan Giggs taking over as a kind of interim manager type thing. I'm not sure what that relates to.
There seems to be a sort of... a split in the hierarchy at Manchester United between what, for the purposes of this conversation, we'll call kind of old United, the Ferguson class of 92.
And that's a Giggs.
David Gill. And they're obviously pro Giggs.
Philo Giggs, right?
Yeah, and the more commercially aimed side of Manchester United, who are, for Christ's sake, we just need to win something.
Right.
And there are leaks coming out from both sides.
Who's going to win at Stamford Bridge on Saturday at 3 o'clock when West Ham take on Chelsea?
I think... draw.
Really?
I think Chelsea will win.
Do you?
Yeah, I think Chelsea will win.
All right. Okay.
Hammers.
I'm thinking Hammers.
I mean, Hammers are in great form. Yeah. I'm just trying to be counterintuitive.
Right.
I'm thinking that these are the former champions and they are at home and they are unbeaten in, what, 12, 13 games?
Can you imagine if next season in the Champions League we have Leicester, Tottenham and West Ham?
That's entirely possible at this point.
And with the big five still desperately trying to find Champions League places on arbitrary notions of being big, and you've got three different teams in the Champions League, that would be probably football's finest moment in the last 20 years.
Wow.
Yes.
You know what? Speaking about all of this, here's Graham Hackney, who says, if City or Liverpool win the European Cups that they're in, but finish out of the top four, do we get six in the Champions League next year?
It's only five.
Thanks, Ian. Well, you know what? I've got it all here. No, but you're absolutely right. You can sub this down enormously. Basically, you can't have more than five places. I'll read the small print. Maximum of five teams from one association can enter the Champions League. If both the Champions League title holders and the Europa League title holders are from the same top three ranked association and finish outside the top four, the fourth place team of their association will be moved to the Europa League. That's you, Arsenal.
It's known as the Tottenham Protocol.
Right, it's happened before, hasn't it? If West Ham, by the way, get in the top four and win the FA Cup... Oh, God, this goes on for basically, they just keep on going down the league and adding Europa League. They're stuck in Europa League. So you get extra European places, but not in the competition.
That's not going to be good for Villa in their championship season, to be having to be playing Europe.
Like. Exactly. Because I think they might be in with the fair play shout.
Yeah.
Although I think Swansea are leading that at the moment. Swansea, yeah. All right. Anyway... Well, that looks like a really interesting battle. So West Ham and Man United could be taking a significant step towards knocking Man City out of the Champions League positions. And that. Another game this weekend is Watford-Stoke. But, you know, I think enjoyable though that game will be, and I'm sure it will be enjoyable, you'd probably rather talk about the extraordinary situation down at the bottom end of the table. So we'll do that right after this.
Hello, and welcome to another day of export opportunity. Global demand for UK food and drink is booming. Right now, a range of our goods are needed around the world, including healthy snacks, chocolate, and craft beer. To find your opportunity, visit exportingisgreat.gov.uk.
Right. Stuart Mulhall says, with it being St Patrick's Day, who is everyone's favourite Irish player of all time? By the way, just what do you think about this? Because I've sprung it on them, listeners. May I just say, happy St Patrick's Day to everybody if you're listening on the 17th. And happy everyone who has a birthday today. Yeah. Right, favourite Irish player of all time? There's so many to choose from. Andy Townsend?
Cascarino.
Cascarino.
John Aldridge. I always particularly enjoyed John Aldridge's tantrum in the US World Cup in 1994 on the touchline where he berated mercilessly a fourth official who wouldn't let him on.
All right, there you go. Kevin Kilbane, I'm going to say, because, you know, I actually know him and he's such a...
He's lovely.
He's a lovely bloke. But... Paul, you got a...
Well, two left-siders, Liam Brady or Damien Duff.
What about Wes Houlihan?
Wes Houlihan, yeah, I mean, but that would be predictable, wouldn't it? I'm trying to show that I'm just beyond my kind of parochial affiliation.
All right.
Roy Keane, isn't it?
It is Roy Keane.
Or Paul McGrath. Paul McGrath.
By the way, happy St Patrick's Day, especially to everybody who shelled out big bucks to come and see us at that enormous mega venue that we've sold out, I think, now. I know the last time I looked, there were 50 tickets left.
Yeah.
But they're gone, I believe. Maybe not.
Posters all over Dublin.
Are there?
Yeah.
Wanted. Are there genuinely posters all over
Billboards,
Dublin?
Billboards.
Arrest these men.
Are you having a go?
No.
There were genuinely posters.
I was jealous. I was like, you know.
Kind of posters. What did it say?
There were like four chairs and a mic just dropping down.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Evocative.
Wow. That's because they couldn't get the image rights for us. That's amazing.
They didn't want
them. Are you...
No.
This
I
is
wouldn't
for real.
Do that, Jimbo.
On the reel?
Yeah.
Wow. Hey, speaking of exciting posters, here's Tommy who says, I'm sick of always hearing people asking you to talk about foreign leagues like MLS. Can you talk A-League instead? Tommy, we can't, unfortunately, on the basis that we don't know anything about it.
Ironically, not there anymore.
Ironically, I could talk about MLS. I haven't watched the LA Galaxy on Monday. I don't think anyone would be particularly interested.
When did you see them?
I watched them on Monday for an article for Y Scout, which you can find on my Twitter feed or my Facebook feed.
Right, they played, was it DC United?
They played DC United in the first game, and they were terrible for the entire first half. Gerrard particularly out of sorts, but they did come back and win 4-1.
Oh, yeah.
They lost to Colorado Rapids on Monday,
right?
Which, you know, they do play at ridiculous
high
altitude.
Tempo.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, it was hideous altitude. But they were...
It genuinely really, really high?
I mean, yeah, it's Mile High City, isn't it?
Right, okay, that's true.
Oh, no, that's Denver.
Breathless stuff, but they were very, very poor.
Where do the Colorado Rapids play, then?
True, I don't know.
Play at Dick's Sporting Pound Shop or something.
No, it's Dick's Sporting...
Sporting Goods Arena,
that's
the
one. What city is
Boulder?
Is it Boulder, Colorado?
Just putting it in there. Right. This is the other Colorado place, apart from
South Park. I'm going to move on. We discussed San Jose earthquakes, or quakes.
How's it going in the Chinese league right now?
Hang on, this is important. Lots of people had lots of things to say about this. Because I said I thought it was a little bit insensitive calling yourself the Quakes, you know, given the area. But Martin Utley says the wrong fault line, because I said it was the San Andreas fault. It's actually the Haywood and Silver Creek fault. I should have known that from that terrific film.
Oh, what a film that was.
What a film. Anyway, Ed says that's not the only one. As well as the San Jose earthquakes, you have the Chicago Fire, which is like having the London Plague or the Yorkshire Rippers. Evan G backs him up. He says, yeah, Chicago Fire is way more borderline offensive. The Great Chicago Fire of 1871 destroyed 3 square miles of the city, killing almost 300 people and left over 100,000 people homeless. Christas Paddock says, yeah, what about the New England Revolution on the subject of great disasters? I don't think you're quite on the right pages, same page as everyone else, Christas, with that. Anyway, sorry, Paul.
That's all right.
Oh, you wanted Chinese
ignore
league.
The Chinese league.
Also, big shout out to Bri at Patoman77, who says, both my daughters are cheerleaders for Unity All-Stars, and it is both fiercely competitive and very dangerous. Now, producer Ben insists that we talk about football now.
Ugh.
Right, while we wait to see if Palace are going to come and join this relegation party, it's very much Sunderland just above that thin dotted line, but only on goal difference. Norwich are the team just on the other side. How many goals do you need to score to make up that goal difference?
I think we need to score four.
Four goals?
Yeah.
All right. And then just 1 point behind you, though, and Newcastle, who've now got all raffered up and looked a lot better, to be fair, on Monday, started impressively in that game away at Leicester. And then down the bottom, Villa, 9 points from safety, and they've got a game away at Swansea, and they've lost 5 games in a row, conceded 17, scored 2. We're not going to talk about them. But we've got 2 matches then that seem relevant. Norwich at West Brom and the Newcastle-Sunderland derby. Obviously, we start with Norwich-West Brom.
Yeah, let's get that out of the way.
Tony Pulis hit by court order, forcing him to pay millions to Crystal Palace. He's going to be really upset about that.
He'll be pumped up.
He'll be pumped up.
He's probably spent it all on baseball caps.
Maybe.
Yeah. But crucially, Ray Wilkins has said on SkySports.com that Norwich will only get 3 more points this season.
What?
He says we won't win another game.
Wow, that'll be and pinned if, that up on the dressing board.
Exactly,
dressing
printed board. Out from the internet and pinned up on the dressing room board.
Yeah.
So,
I'm seeing basically somebody scoring a goal for Norwich, wheeling away to the camera and saying, that's for you, Ray.
Yeah, exactly.
Who would be doing the scoring, though?
Bamford now.
Bamford.
He's the great white hope. Now, I was there
Has
on Saturday.
He scored for them, then?
Did no, he score? But he nearly scored from 30
Who could
30
score
yards.
For Palace, who have a goal-scoring problem, right. That's going to score the goals.
Yes, mate, that's yes. it. That's the sort of attitude, the sort right. of perspective we need. So I was there on Saturday. I thought we were very good.
Really
the best
good.
Performance I've seen this season, right? Because we didn't make any suicidal errors. Right, we didn't really create all that much, but we had a good 5-10 minute passage in the first half where it looked like we could.
Right,
now I am going to go to West Brom on the back of this because
Brilliant.
Hope has been rekindled, right? Mm. Which is the worst position to be in, but I think we have a front four that can play good football. I think we can probably open up a team on the break. Now the question is, are West Brom going to want to come and win this game?
Well, isn't that what they do now? Because they've got their own kind of West Midlands MSN in Berahino and Sessignon
and Rondon.
And Rondon, thank you. Yeah.
Rondon would be the guy I'd be
the
worried
BSR.
About.
Didn't that used to be like a motorcycle?
There you go.
Was it a beer? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, but it's going to be 0-0, isn't it?
It could be, but what if Bamford kind of nicks one in from 6 yards with 5 minutes to go and we win 1-0?
That would be
then
amazing.
It's on.
Do you know what, Paul? You beat West Brom 3-0 in the League Cup earlier this season.
We also beat West Brom when we had to with the penultimate game of the season, the first season of Chris Hughton, so the season before we went down. And we also lost 1-0 at home against West Brom when we did go down, when we... That they had Pepe Melé in terrible form.
Oh yeah,
and it
Pepe Melé.
Yeah, where? What about him? And we lost that 1-0. And so these fixtures at this part of the season with West Brom have been real indicators of what happens. So I think win this one.
It's hard not to wish
hopeful.
The Canaries well in this game. I mean, West Brom,
everybody's written us off. Everybody's written us off.
Right.
And we are right in that, we are absolutely as much in that mix as Sunderland and Newcastle. But
absolutely. All right. Wow. Well, meantime, the other game then going on at the weekend, well, actually on Sunday, is Newcastle-Sunderland. Have some quotes. Here was a trendy foreign manager with all his smart ideas getting beat by some oik from the Midlands. This is Big Sam talking about how he inflicted Rafa Benitez's first Premier League defeat with Bolton. This is way back in 2004. Some hippie ending up with a broken nose. I think it's a model for all the managers around the world, their style of football, his behaviour. Their style of football, I think, is the one Barcelona are thinking of copying. That was Rafa Benitez being a little bit sarcastic about Sam Allardyce when Sam was at Blackburn and Liverpool beat them in February 2010. So there's not a lot of love lost, and thanks to producer Ben for digging out those quotes, not a lot of love lost between these two.
I remember going to a West Ham-Chelsea game when Rafa Benitez had got the interim manager job there and was obviously getting a lot of grief from Chelsea fans. And after the game, Big Sam came down into the press room and he was asked if he had any sympathy for Rafa Benitez. And he said, nah, I don't have no sympathy.
Right.
Yeah. There you go.
Wow.
He's had some fun with that, with calling Jurgen Klopp a soft German earlier this season. He seems... The funny thing about... Allardyce is. I've been up to Sunderland a couple of times this season. I saw him about 3 weeks ago. He does not look like a man in a relegation battle. He doesn't act like a man in a relegation battle. If he is feeling any pressure, he's keeping it very, very private. And around the club, they said there's no fear or worry there. But maybe just out of a kind of sense of innate Allardyce-ness that he will somehow get them out there. And the signings he's made have been excellent, and the performances they've put in have been excellent. They haven't quite got the results. They haven't won since that Man United game. And this is a horrible one, because they're now going to be facing... Whereas they were looking at St James's Park that was miserable, and everyone turning on everyone... Now, that's going to be pretty much unified now. They're very, very pleased with Rafa Benitez's appointment. And you know, you can see why. If he can just stop them being so stupid at the back, then they might just have a chance. I worry also about what he can do up front. There's no real goal scorer there. But this is the kind of worst thing that could have happened to Sunderland.
He can't play as the nine, though.
Right, no, he can't do that. But you could have what's his name?
Mitrovic. But yeah. He doesn't appear to contribute Dumbia. Much apart from a temper.
Dumbia.
Oh, yeah, Dumbia.
He's great at Cheska Moscow, then he moves somewhere in January and doesn't do anything.
Mm.
But I haven't seen much of him, so.
No.
But yeah, Newcastle have followed the Sunderland protocol of staying up, haven't they, of course?
As mentioned in Monday's podcast.
Our cheerleaders.
Sunderland have. We found time to mention that as well. Sunderland have won seven. Again, we've mentioned this before, if you count the one that, bizarrely, these two clubs held behind closed doors during the Christmas period. Extraordinary. But it sounds like you're suggesting that with the arrival of Benitez, it's just changed the whole paradigm, plus it's on telly.
Oh, yeah, Newcastle always win on telly. Right. Well, play well. Well, turn up.
Yeah. Mark G says... Can Ian McIntosh please predict that Sunderland will win the derby on Sunday?
No. 0-0 draw, two red cards, one on each team.
Really?
Yeah. Ooh.
Lovely.
Wow.
What about the horses?
Poor horses.
Yeah. Mm. That's pretty much it then for today. But I've got a final question for Ian McIntosh from listener producer Ben, who says that he's heard talk that what with Neil Lennon getting the heave-ho at struggling Bolton... that they might recall Phil Brown.
It is quite possible.
From your favourite club, Southend.
Southend. He has
How
said, would
you feel about that?
I'd pat him on the back. Yeah. You know, it's a club he's obviously got great fondness for. He worked there with Sam Allardyce. Mm. He's been excellent for Southend, bringing us up through the playoffs and having us on the fringes of the playoffs now. But there's no question Bolton Wanderers are much bigger club than Southend United, and Phil Brown naturally has ambitions to get back up towards the top, and if that's what he wants to do, he can have a pat on the back and maybe a little hug from me. And Chris Powell is available.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, greatest human being ever. And that's not a bad replacement if we get Chris
He's
Powell.
He's the greatest human being ever.
He is a wonderful, wonderful man, Chris Powell.
Mahatma Gandhi?
Nah. Probably, maybe top five, but not better than Chris Powell.
Speaking of Neil Lennon, do you remember at the beginning of the season when everyone was going, oh, I can't believe Leicester. They should have appointed Neil Lennon. What are they doing with this man Ranieri?
We weren't there, were we, listeners?
No.
burn the tapes. Now, well, that's it then for this show. You can catch James and myself trying to make head or tail out of the whole Milan Lazio story on Sunday night.
Can.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Tension.
Mihailovic.
Yeah, Mihailovic and that. Have you got anything special listeners should look out for, Ian?
No.
On the set pieces, maybe?
Oh, on the set pieces. Well, we're continuing our season-by-season history of English football with 1979, 1980 today. Check that one out. Yep. For Charlie George's severed finger.
Ooh. Right. Mac?
I'm just on the verge of sealing a nice little piece of content from the art critic Jonathan Mead.
Nice.
About the nature of Instagram.
Great.
So look out for that in about a while.
Brilliant. Okay. I'm going to scurry off and prepare a little review of the top. Is it a horror film? Is it a bit of social documentary? The Witch, and then bang out one on Midnight Special as well. Anyway,
you need to do a video about it.
Oh, I see, that came out all wrong. But anyway, you can see all of the all of that kind of thing on Jimbo Vision on YouTube if you want. wasn't that funny?
Red band trailer.
Do come along, because I get lonely otherwise. Anyway, that's it for today, listeners. See you soon on Monday with the pod. And thanks to Paul, Ian and James and producer Ben. And have a great weekend.